Greetings. It's me, Chris Denson. Welcome, everybody, to another installment of Innovation Crush. I am your gracious host, as I've said many times before. In case you're tuning in for the first time ever, this show covers all things creativity, ideas, and business. So today, we're going to keep the ball rolling with a very fun and enlightened guest, Ari Popper. Say hello.
Hello.
And he's very literal. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Great. I'm doing great.
For starters, I would love, because I'm horrible at introductions, if you could give us the 60-second version of who Ari Popper is.
Sure, yeah. Where do you want me to start?
You can be as deep and philosophical as you feel, or you can be as like resume-driven as you will. Then we'll get into either. We'll explore both.
Sure, yeah. Well, I am the founder and CEO of a company called SciFutures, and what we do is we use science fiction prototyping to help our clients imagine where they could be, and then we build it. But my background is originally South African, via Australia, and then to the U.S., so I've been here about 20 years.
It's a very roundabout path.
Uh-huh.
Where were you escaping?
They're still trying to find me. I don't think they got me.
Well, you got him here now, folks.
Yeah.
Am I an accomplice to anything? I don't want to be.
Yes, you are. Yeah. Too late.
Damn it. Not again.
Yeah.
So when you say clients, who are they?
Yeah, we got some really great clients. You know, Fortune 100 clients, you know, like Hershey and Visa and Crayola and, you know, General Mills.
So what is the future of crayons?
It's pretty cool.
So that's such an interesting combination of services, right? Like you're looking at the science fiction future, but the science real version of science fiction. How do you like walk that line, right? What are the things that inspire you, and like how do you take that to your clients and create stuff?
Yeah, well, you know, the thing is we live in such amazing times, you know, like science fact really is sci-fi. And the big problem with organizations is they don't realize that. They don't realize that they need to have these sci-fi-like, extremely disruptive, interesting visions of where innovation could be, because you can actually build something that approximates it or gets a lot closer to that. So, yeah, our whole process is about using storytelling and sci-fi in an explicit way to help our clients get a much better sense of where they could be and then to build their future. So, you know, science fiction as an entertainment genre does it, but it does it implicitly. You know, it does it. You go, oh wow, that's cool. It'd be great to live in that world. Maybe,
right.
Maybe one day we'll live in that, right? Whereas, you know, we're trying to do it explicitly, so we can help organizations kind of get out of their own way, so they can do that sort of cool stuff.
Are your clients, I guess, collectively, is there one thing you see that people are like scared of, right? Because everybody has some fear of things that they've seen in science fiction films that we're getting a little too close to, right?
Yeah, well, I think what they're scared of is being disrupted out of existence, you know, and you're seeing that happen more and more in lots of different categories, and just complete blurring of boundaries of categories. You know, you have an Xbox One, which used to be a gaming console, then it became a media console, and now it's probably an Internet of Things, you know, home console. So everyone's afraid of the change, and what our process does is it helps them get a much better sense of where their brands should be in the next, you know, 5 to 10 years using the storytelling approach.
That's great. So from a business challenge standpoint for you, it's like, this sounds like, woo, like, you know, it sounds like so blue sky. Like, what's the pitch process, right? When you meet somebody for the first time, you're like, well, we're going to watch a bunch of movies and then and take those screenshots to be storyboards for your next project.
Yeah, you know, it is. I mean, on the face of it, just superficially, it does sound a little crazy. You know, science fiction is it's a bit of a double-edged sword. You know, to your point, what you're implying is on the one hand, it's, you know, crazy out there sci-fi. But on the other hand, storytelling and science fiction or science fiction prototyping based in science fact is actually a really amazing way to help businesses get comfortable with emerging technologies.
Right.
Because it puts it into context, it makes it human, it makes it real. And it also gives them a good sense of how they could exist in more disruptive ecosystems. You know, let's say augmented reality is ubiquitous, or you know, AI assistants are ubiquitous, which is coming.
Right.
You know, how should we be doing business in those environments? And then our process is about working backwards from there. So saying, okay, if that's our future, what should we be doing today? Who should we be talking to? What kind of proof of concept should we be creating that will start to approximate that world? And what's happening as our clients do that is they're accelerating their innovation from a linear path into more of this interesting exponential path.
That's great. Yeah. It's because I know we kind of play in similar. Like you're way ahead of me on this, but convincing a client to do, because it's one thing to think about it and to go like, hey, here's our proposal and what we think. that's awesome.
Yeah.
See you later, Ari. Yeah. Like, how do you convert them to action?
Yeah. Right? Yeah. It's a great question, and I think there's a bit of self-selection that goes on. So some clients will never work with us, and that's okay. You know, maybe they're not ready for us or they don't understand it. But, you know, to be honest, Chris, I've been amazed at, the great caliber of clients we've had. And I think when I went into this business about 4 years ago, I thought it would be a hard sell. I thought I would have the most trouble explaining to people that they need to accelerate their innovation, that they need to be sci-fi-like in order to be relevant. And actually, that hasn't been the case. I think CEOs are lying awake at night, worried, and thinking, how do we accelerate our innovation? How do we become more innovative? So that wasn't the problem. Really, what it was about is, well, what are we going to get out of this? What tangible something are we going to get out of working with you guys?
What's my ROI?
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. You know, what are we getting for
it? It's very bottom. Like, it's funny because it's such a bottom line, basis, and the future may not be as clear cut as like a bottom line thing. So there's definitely that balance of, we want you to think open and like have fun in this process, but they also want you to go like, all right, but how much money is this investment going to make me?
That's right. And, it's a little bit of a trade-off, right? So you're going to get learning, you're going to get a better understanding of emerging technology, you're going to get some great ideas, and then hopefully you're going to prototype them. Some of them are going to fail completely. Most of them, in fact, are going to fail. But you might get one or two, like with Lowe's, for example, where we had a really profound disruption that we helped them invent.
The holodeck?
The holo room, yeah.
Holo room, yes. Well, based on the holodeck.
That's right.
Can you talk about that a little bit for people who may not know? Because I've actually done it.
Oh, excellent.
Yes. Keep going.
You did the holo room?
It's you're the guest.
Yeah, yeah. I would like to hear about that. Chris, so tell me about Nuts.
My mom was horrible to me.
So, Lowe's came to us a few years ago, and, they were... What was interesting was a consumer insight, the business problem that they had was that have you ever done a renovation?
Yes. Yeah.
So, it's there's some serious barriers to doing it successfully. The first one is...
The original show was actually called Renovation Crush. It was like all construction.
Nice.
It lasted two episodes and then we revamped.
Yeah. Well, you'll know from your renovation experience is that it's very hard for people to visualize what a completed project would be. And the other problem is it's very hard for people to tell their partner what they like because they're not quite sure of themselves and they might have... So it creates a lot of tension, creates a lot of problems. And actually, Lowe's quantified that. And it's literally worth billions of dollars in failed or no renovation.
Indecision, right?
Indecision, yeah. And so the insight was if there was a way to help customers imagine what a completed project could be like, make all the mistakes in a simulator... and kind of get aligned, and then based upon perfecting it in a simulator, they'll then be able to do the real thing in their home. So that was the insight. And so, we went through a process with sci-fi writers, and we created this narrative, which, as you said, suggested some kind of holodeck. And then the clients who are... Lowe's is a very traditional company, run by very conservative people.
Get the fuck out of here.
they read the stories and they were little comic books. And they said, wow, now we get it. Now we know what augmented reality
is. So part of your pitch process was a comic book.
Yeah, and it depends on the clients. We do movies. We do other types of storytelling formats, depending on what they need.
Right.
But this particular one was a comic book. And literally in the boardroom, they handed around this comic book, and it was a story about a couple in the future renovating their home using a holo room. And they were like, holy shit, that's freaking amazing. We get augmented reality now. We get virtual reality. Can we do that?
And did you bring LeVar Burton to the pitch?
No, would have been cool.
No Jordy LaForge?
That's a shame. That would have sold it. Actually, he has a funny story for you. So my client was flying back from Brazil on the corporate jet, and I was coming in the next morning to pitch. And he's a CEO of International at Lowe's. And my client said, "Let's watch some sci-fi," because you know, they have TVs on the movies on the plane, and
right.
And the CEO was like, "I hate sci-fi," and I was, and he was like, "Oh God, tomorrow's gonna be a disaster."
Oh wait, tomorrow?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
This is the idea that you went in with, or at least let's say the one that won, right?
That's right. There were a few other ideas.
So I'm curious, what in that particular instance, what were some other things you were like, maybe we do? You know, what were the other ones?
Yeah, the graveyard of sci-fi ideas. Yeah, and there's a lot of those. There were a few that were more literal. So using a cell phone to generate like a holographic image, either more literal or just too far out there.
Right.
Those are the ones that I can remember as a little while ago. But the holoroom just seemed right.
Yeah.
What's been very interesting in the sci-fi prototyping process is that when we started the process, AR and VR was early. So Oculus was still on Kickstarter. Actually, it was just...
Yeah,
you know, just getting that kind of momentum.
Palmer wasn't so lucky at this point.
No, exactly. And you know, we tried to get in with them, but they were just too busy. But when we prototyped the Holoroom, we went through 3 different augmented reality companies in about 18 months because the technology increased so quickly and changed so quickly that we literally had to pivot 3 times. And that was stressful, but you know, it ended up with a great product. But VR and AR is so, there's so much money getting poured into it. And it's happened, basically 3-4 years.
Yeah. Now, and I mean, what's that hurdle like for you guys? Because I know, especially when you're creating the future today and the future is constantly creating itself, right? How do you map back to, what's happening in reality and where you want to go in the first place? And like, what if... I can imagine a scenario where you're in the middle of making a Holoroom and then you read a trade and like somebody's like, such and such has a Holoroom. You're like, Chuck E. Cheese now has a... You're like, what? No.
It's happens to us all the time.
Right.
So we're doing a big... Well, we've been waiting to do a big project for a big beverage company. And we've been sitting on this about 18 months. And they haven't been able to get the shit together internally.
Right.
For whatever reason, a great client, but...
Now, what company is this? No.
beverage company. And a few weeks ago, we read that, the concept that we wanted to build 18 months ago was out in the market. And we're all disappointed. The client was disappointed. But that's the nature of the times we live in.
So you, as an individual, like, how did you get... Like, are you a sci-fi geek yourself? Like, what does it take to make this happen? Or are you just like, I got an idea. I'm going to look at movies.
Yeah. I am a sci-fi geek. So what started...
By the way, you know what I pulled up the other day?
Yeah.
I was joking about a trip to Australia, and I said, what if... because the ozone layer and how close we are to the sun, like, what if we pitched the idea of swimsuits being, like, just armored, kind of, like a whole thing. And I pulled up a picture of the robot that was on Gilligan's Island. Remember that?
Yeah, I do.
See?
Yeah. I do.
Back to you.
Yeah. What was the question? How does it work?
Yes.
Yeah. So the idea is that...
Where did you come from? Were you the sci-fi?
Like all crazy ideas, they're born out of midlife crises, right? So I was president of a market research company, and I was tired of the industry, and I wanted to do something different.
What do market research companies really do?
That's for your next guest.
Okay.
So I just went back to writing sci-fi because I love sci-fi, and I did some writing courses. I'm very amateur, but it's cool.
As a hobby, like
as a total hobby.
Okay, no published works.
Nothing published. Trust me. And literally just during class one day, I just had an epiphany, like legit. I was like, if we apply this, it could be really cool. I think there's something here.
So you weren't this wasn't like a college age. I mean, 4 years ago, you start this company.
Yeah, and if you could see a picture of me, your viewers.
I mean, you're a handsome fellow.
I'm not college though.
I'm jealous. because I just to paint the picture, this wasn't like you were 19, 20. Like, great.
This was, five, 6 years ago. 5 years ago. But it was epiphany. And the idea was, sci-fi is very good at building worlds and futures grounded in science fact, hard sci-fi in particular. Maybe there's something here that we can do for our corporate clients.
Right.
And, I came home and told my wife, I have an idea what my next career is going to be. And she's like, you're crazy. You're nuts.
I want a divorce.
Yeah, no. My wife's awesome. She's like, you know what? It's crazy enough to work. And I was like, let's give it a go. So I started the company. But what happened was very early in the process, I realized that we were very successful in generating these visions of where these companies could be.
Right.
So much so that they needed to do something about it. They were like, you know, all dressed up for the date, you know, and like all ready to party, and then we left.
Right.
And it was like, okay, now we need to help them build something. We need it. And that wasn't part of the original business plan. The original business plan was more just, you know,
plant the seed, thought, inspire them. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. And then I met my partner, Scott Tuscon, who is a specialist in emerging technologies, a fabricator. He's built labs, real kind of visionary on the technology side. And so it was a great partnership because together we could get the visions, tell the story, but then he would be able to go out and actually fabricate, you know, crazy sci-fi-like stuff, prototype. Right. And then the company really kind of kicked on.
Why were you so unsatisfied as a researcher?
Do you want me to get in all of that?
Yeah, no, just like, you know, because I feel like everyone hits this transitional point, right?
Yeah.
Where it's like, I could keep doing this, and I don't feel fulfilled. And,
right.
and not everybody recognizes or gives, you know, acknowledgement to that feeling.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I think the insight for me was that I was successful in my career. You know, I was a president of a market research company. I built the U.S. division from the ground up, you know, to 4 offices. We were making money. We were doing well. But it was, I felt like, you know, I'm looking at the studio guy, you know, apologies, but I felt like, you know, when problems came up, I would just go to the board, you know, the audio board, and I would just turn that knob, you know,
right.
just kind of senior level management stuff, you know, where it was easy for me to kind of keep the ship sailing. You know, I wasn't challenged. And the industry itself, I just felt, you know, I felt like there had to be more than just providing insights. It wasn't
right.
enough for me. But I had no freaking clue what I wanted to do. And when you get to that point, I don't know if anyone's been through that, you know, who's listening, you can't lie to yourself. You can't pretend that the next thing you're going to do is make you happy. You've got to be very honest.
Right.
Because otherwise you're going to end up exactly where you were.
Very true.
And that's a tough process. You've got to work through that. And you've got to see the part of yourself that's, you know, that's maybe doing something for an ego sense or doing something because you think you might want it or someone else might want you to want it.
Right.
And that took me. It's
a lot of filtering. It's a lot of, because there's voices and you're unlearning everything that got you to be where you were at that point in time.
Exactly. And you got to trust yourself. You got to have faith that your passion or what you deep down honestly believe in is right for you. And that's scary if you're not used to that.
Right.
So, you know, got to take some risks. So that's why I left.
That's great.
Yeah.
So, you know, when I look at your website, and especially you click on the team page, and like everyone's kind of decked out in a superhero, and there's avatars and, you know, animation, an ode to your comic book, if you will.
Yeah.
But I love this idea of superpowers in the workplace, right? Like, you know, it's a little bit of poeticism, but everyone has a superpower. What's yours?
I think when I'm on form and in my bliss, you know, in my flow, I think it's the ability to inspire folks to really take risks and do something interesting and profound. I think that is my superpower. You know, the rest of the team has to figure out how to make it happen. They hate me for that. They're like, damn it.
Like, he sold a what?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But I think that's what makes our team really special. You know, in fact, my colleague was saying to me yesterday, we're at San Francisco at a client, and there were 4 of us in the room, 4 from my team, and we all have very different superpowers. And it's this lovely kind of, you know, I think it's quite rare in business. I know, Chris, if you've had that amazing, you know, combination of different skills, it's just so powerful, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And there's also like, and I'm curious to this, especially as an entrepreneur, the patience it takes to make that team the right team, right? Yeah. Because somebody may have the right skill sets on paper. It may come from a great recommendation. And like I've just heard some research about there's the similar nerve endings that are in the brain that exist in the gut.
That's right.
Like literally in your stomach. And that's why that gut feeling is actually like a neurological thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's that happens when you like are interviewing or like courting a potential team member. So what's that process like about identifying the right, you know, superheroes to join?
You know, we are so crap at recruiting. And it's something that I've always struggled
right.
to do well because I'm such a intuitive guy, and like I go by gut anyway, and I like people. So if someone's like nice in the interview, I'm like, you're hired, and you know, like, and it's come to bite me a couple of times. But
hired who?
Yeah, why? Nice guy. I think as an entrepreneur, you need to use the skills that you have in your team. And so to take your question and I just twist it a little is, okay, we have the skill set. Maybe we should be thinking about using it in this way or that way. And I think we've been able to do that quite well. So rather than forcing, you know, your team into a paradigm, it's saying, okay, we're all creative, we're all smart, we've all been in business a long time. What could we collectively do that'd be really powerful? And I think we've been quite good at that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was the most difficult superpower to find?
I think folks who, well, we're struggling to find, and we spoke, you know, creative technologists. So
right.
Folks who are just as comfortable with Arduinos and tinkering and emerging technology as they are talking to clients and, you know, thinking about strategy and being a little bit personable.
Yeah.
Those are tough to find.
Well, it's we had this guy named Walter O'Brien on the show who's the series Scorpion on CBS is based on his real life. So he's a, you know, genius, has worked with the government, and he started this company, Scorpion, and they basically recruit geniuses. And one thing that's really interesting about that is he said that most geniuses, if they're not, you know, discovered as a genius, like commit suicide by, I think it's age 15 or 17.
Is that right?
Huh? Yeah, there's a statistic behind it because they're just social outcasts because they just don't relate to the world and they think there's just something wrong with them. But he created this thing and what he talks about is there's the IQ and then there's the EQ. Like there's an emotional quotient that comes with a creative technologist or like that you hope you get with that, you know, that individual that can like be fun and personable and not offensive and patient and also like can do the science behind it all.
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, it's, you know, you're familiar with this. I'm starting to hate the term now, but the unicorn. They're a unicorn. They're rare. Yeah. They can talk to people and they're brilliant, you know, with technology and they are hard to find.
Well, I talked to one company that they mentioned like they will interview 50 people for every job.
Wow.
I mean, that's a lot of HR work.
Yeah.
So, you know, what's on your wish list, right? Like, if, you know, as far as the clients that you're working with, is there a particular, outside of the beverage guys who can't get the shit together? I hope they don't hear this.
I hope so, too. They'll agree and kind of shrug their head and they're like, oh, you're right.
No, but like, is there like that one thing that you're paying attention to in a technology category or a future category that you're like, oh, man, I want to do X?
Yeah, there's a ton. So part of what we do is we look at all emerging tech, you know, things like Internet of Things and VR and AR and sensors and printed electronics and 3D printing. And what's powerful is that they don't exist on their own. When you create these concentric circles of influence, the whole ecosystem becomes incredibly powerful, right? So we're looking at all of that. And I think companies today are underestimating the nature of the times that we live in and what they can actually achieve if they set their minds to it. So you and I were chatting a little bit earlier about biometrics and quantified self. I mean, and it's very siloed right now. But when you take something like biometrics and you put it in a smart home, now the home knows how you feel. It knows what you're buying and eating, so it creates an improved algorithm about how to serve you based upon your biometrics. And it's that kind of stuff that that I'm so passionate about because I think, there's 1 + 1 + 1 = 15. It's not that hard. You just got to have that willingness to do it and experiment. And that's kind of what excites me. And occasionally we get these really brave clients who are like, I think we kind of agree. And they want to go and do something like that. And you can come up with really cool stuff.
How much of the future, like at least when you're considering it, is functional versus like something you just touched on, like the emotional or social state we'll be in? Because I think the way we connect and the way we operate and the things we care about and the things that move us are going to be different because of how we interact, right? Like the home may keep you in a better mood, which means, you know, productivity goes up, which means blah, like there's this domino effect. Like how much do you guys consider that piece of it alongside the functionality?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the power of the storytelling part, right? Is that it's not just technology. It's not a technology story. It's a story about people having real lives, real interactions. You know, we all still got to get up. We got to go to work. We got to make a living. We got to care for our children. We got to eat. So it's still those basic human needs.
Right.
But technology is now providing a service within that context. And that's where the social side comes through very, very strongly. So we've just finished a movie for a big CPG company for their IT department to basically create this aspirational narrative of where the company could be based upon the ubiquity of these emerging technologies. So in other words, it's an inspirational piece, and their message is mostly related to improved quality of life, more family time, right, less stress, which is really interesting because they're smart enough to understand that the benefit of technology is not technology for technology's sake. It's exactly as you said, it's to have better lives and better interactions with people and, you know, more human experience. So pretty interesting. I think the other thing is we're not trying to predict the future, and we're not trying to
there's no Miss Cleo that works on you.
No, there's no Miss Cleo. But, you know, really what we're trying to do is two things. Disorient our clients. Because the world is disorienting right now.
Right.
Like, really disorienting them. Get them off their business plans. Get them off their business models. And then the value is in the reorienting. So now it's like, okay, so what do we need to look towards? What do we need to point towards that gets us on that preferred future path? And that's what we do.
Now, you think about timelines and things like that, right? Yeah. When, because I understand, like, there's probably a portfolio of things you do, and then there's like the segmented things.
Yeah.
So, if someone were to take the full Sci Futures, like, platinum program, what kind of time frame are we talking about, right? Like,
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, typically, so our ideal projects are ones where we'll go through three phases, and it could take over a year, maybe even longer, depending on the prototype.
Right.
But the first phase is just getting our clients up to speed. We call it grounding. So, you're aware of all these emerging technologies, not only in your industry but peripheral industries, because they're disrupting everyone. Because it's grounding, and then it's the disorienting. There we actually work with science fiction writers, with our clients in a workshop environment, and we co-create their preferred futures. We actually do utopian futures, and we do dystopian futures, because you need to be, oftentimes the client's not conscious of the barriers that are in their way.
So right.
By doing that, they kind of reveal all this barriers and obstacles that are stopping them from getting where they need to be. And actually the dystopia can be more useful than the utopia. And then we have 100 professional sci-fi writers that write exclusively for us. It's really awesome. And we give them a brief. And we say, client X is trying to achieve this.
I once gave a writer my briefs, but it didn't turn out the way I thought it would.
Okay. Yeah. And
sorry, you give the writers a brief.
Yeah, sorry.
Sometimes I have to insert a really horrible joke.
I was imagining your underwear, and I kind of got a little bit lost.
Oh, I'm not wearing any, so okay. Nothing to imagine.
And so they'll write vignettes using their imagination, grounded under NDA, of course, grounded in the client strategy. And then we'll use that as an idea-generating mechanism to create a preferred future strategy for the client. So that's phase one, grounding, then disorienting, which is the new story. And then the reorienting is actually prototyping. So now that we've got the story, the client buys into it. It's really hard, by the way, to get them to really agree on that story, because they've got to make commitments.
Right.
They've got to agree what they're going to stop doing, which is sometimes harder than agreeing what they have to start doing. Anyway, we get through that phase, and now it's about, okay, let's start building stuff. Let's start building proof of concepts, works like concepts, looks like concepts, experiential spaces where they can bring all their employees into this futuristic environment and say, guys, this is the living room of the future according to company X.
Right.
Wow, that's how it's going to be. And, you get that visceral connection with it. And that's our ideal process. And it can take, I'd say 6 to 8 to 10 months or many, many years. And hopefully,
So this is true business strategy. Because, sometimes when companies are helping organizations define the future, it's not about the survival or creating the legacy. It's about like a marketing moment. Or do you guys even incorporate that? Like, what is the future now? How can we create a marketing moment based on how we see the future?
Yeah, not really. No. Yeah, you're right. It's more long-term strategy. So, agencies like yours, they love this because that's great, interesting content that they can build campaigns on and really activate it now. But no, we're more interested in this, yeah, as you said, strategy and disruptive innovation.
This is all pretty awesome. I'm wondering, you know, what did little Ari Popper in South Africa, want? Like, how did you even get here? Not logistically, but I don't picture.
I swam.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah. It's a long way.
Backstroke.
I was a bit of a sci-fi guy when I grew up. You know, I think growing up in South Africa, you know, you need to. Reality was pretty.
Shout out to Neil Blomkamp.
Yeah, hey, yeah. What's up, Neil? Doing well. You know, I think for me, sci-fi was an escape. You know, it was a way for me to get out of the realities around me, which were, you know, pretty scary.
Right.
So it's just something I always loved. And I think for me, the thrill of sci-fi is, and I don't know if you're a sci-fi fan.
Ish.
Yeah.
When they're good. Yeah, no.
That's right. I always like to say, there's nothing better than great sci-fi, and there's nothing worse than bad sci-fi.
Exactly.
Actually,
bad sci-fi is entertaining for a whole, like, if you watch a sci-fi channel,
really, really bad sci-fi is very entertaining.
Sharktopus.
Yeah, exactly.
It's perfect.
Exactly.
You guys haven't made one of those yet.
No. Maybe one day. I'm sure Scott, my partner, will start working on it. I think the thrill for me is when you're in a world that's fully believable and plausible. So there's no, you completely suspended your disbelief successfully throughout the entire, you know, whether it's a book, you know, a novel or a short story or a movie, that you haven't gone, nah, that couldn't happen. That's crap. If you can keep that, the entire piece, then it's a magical experience because the writer's been able to really pull you in and have you connect with it in a way that's human and real and freaking amazing. And I think people who love sci-fi, it's kind of almost addictive, that feeling.
Well, it's also a conversion mechanism, right? Like for instance, you guys are going to be doing a talk at Create Tech, which is the 4A's, you know, big event on like the creativity of technology and vice versa.
That's right.
But when you give a talk about your work, right? Or you know, outside of a guided one like the show, what are you walking people through? Like, if you could give the verbal, you know, kind of visual presentation of like what people might see at a Ari Popper talk at an event like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think what we want to do is three things. First thing is just give them a quick immersion into how amazing the times are that we live in. You know, when you have companies like Instagram bought for $1 billion, it was a 19-month-old company.
Yeah.
It was worth $1 billion. You know, and you have companies like WhatsApp. They had 55 employees and they were $16 billion. You know, just crazy shit like that's happening. So we need to remind people, okay, get out of your own myopic view. There's some crazy stuff. We live in exponential times. So that's part of it. The second part of it is just if you've ever worked in innovation in big companies, you'll know that it's very hard to do something truly innovative. And that's because the organization is hardwired for efficiency. It's hardwired to get all the inefficiency out of the system. We're producing widgets, and we've got to reduce costs, and we've got to reduce margins. And the only way to do that is to drill down.
Yep.
And now you're saying you've got to be totally inefficient. You've got to basically do stuff that's never been done and make lots of mistakes. So it's very hard. The other thing you'll know, and if you've ever worked in innovation in big companies, is that as soon as you do that, the white blood cells come out in the organization and they attack you. So you need new tools and techniques to be able to overcome these barriers within big companies like Lowe's and Hershey and, you know, other clients that we work with. And the way to do that is through creating a shared narrative that everyone can read and understand, so that when the white blood cells come out and that when the organization starts to default to its muscle memory, you can say, okay, look at this video or read this comic book. Let's remind ourselves why this is important. Let's remind ourselves why we need to do this. And it's a much better way than a PowerPoint presentation, right?
Where you're
like, slide 7 shows that augmented reality will be 67%, you know, penetration, but people don't.
Nobody responds to that.
No,
it's just numbers. It's numbers on a page.
I think what's unique is the creative process, the sci-fi projecting process, helps shortcut some of the obstacles and barriers that will happen every time you're trying to do something really disruptive. So that's the second part of the presentation. It's like, we live in crazy times. Here's some of the barriers that we have. Here are some ways to get over it. And then some case studies. So basically, let's look at, you know, two or three examples that we can share.
Right.
Of where this has been successful.
Speaking of what you can and cannot share,
yeah,
I would imagine, you would have clients like the military or, you know, government organizations and different, maybe even museums, like, or, you know, do you?
Yeah.
And if so, like, okay, that's, I mean, that's awesome. Yeah. Is there a, you know, I'll back up.
Yeah.
Because I think about things that go away as I was talking about museums, and like I was just looking at statistics of attendance going down and how people, like, you want to continue to gauge with centuries old art like we have, and the museums are still trying to figure that kind of thing out.
Yeah.
Are there things that you're seeing that are going away that you hope you can either save or you will definitely miss because we can't save it?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. I haven't really thought of it that way. My philosophy is that things will evolve as they should, but what you need ideally is a preferred strategy or a preferred future so that it doesn't happen to you by accident, that you can have a hand in creating it. Right. So, you know, I'm not the type of guy who's a great example is as we're becoming cyborgs, and we are cyborgs, you know, we all have our devices, we're holding them all the time, you know, and you look around at any public event in a restaurant on the subway.
Oh yeah,
everyone is freaking looking down at their little device. So we are cyborgs,
right?
So the
train phantom vibrations, which is something I learned about.
Oh yeah, so
like,
what's that?
It's like what you just your bot. Like if you keep your phone in your pocket,
got it.
Sometimes you go like, oh, is my phone ringing? And you're like, your phone's not even in your pocket.
Exactly.
Right.
Totally happens to us all the time. Actually, a good one of that I'm experiencing now is I have the Xbox One that I can talk to. So I use the voice UI a lot.
Okay.
And my wife's like, what? Oh, he's talking to the TV again.
Xbox, give me a beer.
There you go. Yeah, exactly.
I would just marry somebody named Xbox.
Yeah, exactly.
Xbox, channel 7.
Yeah, exactly.
Why do you talk to me like
that? So it sounds like you have it too, right?
Yeah.
So have you spoken to dumb TVs yet?
No.
I've done that. I've been in a hotel or at work and I'm like, you know, Xbox, damn it, it's a dumb TV.
I did do that as a practical joke to a friend recently.
Oh, yeah?
He was like, hey, anybody know how to turn the channel on this TV? Because he couldn't find a remote. And I was like, just say football. And he was like, football! And, like, it was just nothing happened. I was pretty much a jerk on that one.
Yeah.
But it was funny.
Yeah, but, you know, things are evolving. So we got to get with it.
Right.
Okay. But we can't accept this emerging future passively, I don't think. I think what a sci-fi prototype or a preferred future narrative of where you could be is important, because then at least you can have a bit of a hand. And, you know, I'm caveating, you can't totally create that preferred future.
Right.
But at least a bit of a hand in shaping your destiny. And if it's positive and if it's uplifting and if it's inspirational, you'll have a much better chance of getting towards, you know, a better future than if you just, you know, evolve and we all become cyborgs and brains in a vat.
Well, I think you guys do a great job, because, you know, I think the idea of the future, especially as we see it now, like if you were talking about, if this were the, you know, 1985, like it might be a little bit easier to chart a path.
Yeah.
But because like the future is happening now so quickly.
Yeah.
I think it's an overwhelming task for, I'm going to go back to the museum example, the executive director of MoMA, right? To go like, because is it social media? Is it VR? Yeah. Is it, you know, HoloRooms? And how do I take it all in and produce something? So I love the fact that you guys are like taking everything that's out there, taking what their brand stands for today, and how do you prolong that legacy?
Right. Yeah, exactly. You know, and the museums one's a good one. Like, yeah, maybe people aren't visiting museums as much as they used to, but as content in museums is becoming digitized, and I think the Smithsonian, they're creating 3D models of every single artifact that they have, which is incredible.
Yeah.
So now, I mean, you can visit the virtual Smithsonian no matter where you are, anywhere.
But
in the world.
But it's the same note. Like that's why I worry. Like there's nothing like going up and feeling the texture of something in its original form.
Yeah.
Versus like, so the Metropolitan Museum of Arts has this really cool thing where they take hip hop lyrics and dump them into the Genius API, the music listening thing.
Yeah.
And as the songs play, you're served up images that are in the Met's like database of
art. That's cool.
So it's like awesome. You know, if you're talking about gods and kings, yeah. or like, you know, this woman betrayed me or whatever it is, yeah. like you're being served images up,
that's
which
cool.
is awesome. And maybe I will want to go set foot in the museum.
Yeah.
Or am I like, oh, that's a cool picture.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's not just a picture. It's like, you know,
yeah.
a 300-year-old painting by Picasso. I don't know. Picasso's yeah. not 300 years old, but you know what I'm saying. It's interesting to think about what our interactions with, you know, tangible and physical things will be.
Yeah, you know, I think it's a great debate, and
yeah.
there's no easy answer to that. I think it's going to be different. Is it better or worse? I don't know. You know, things change, you know.
Yeah.
And it's just the way it is. Yeah, maybe we're going to lose some things that are, as you say, visiting a museum and seeing something tangible is special, but, you know, we're gaining other things. And
I'm going to start crying.
I'm sorry. No.
So the show is called Innovation Crush. You've seen a lot in your 4 or 5 years under this particular banner.
Yeah.
I'm sure you were curious about it all, you know, all your life. And you're always looking out to what's next. So is there something that you see that you're currently crushing on, you know, something that you may have touched on already, or something that you're like, oh my gosh, that's amazing. You know?
Yeah. And I'm very intrigued and hopeful about the promise of AI in the home. So this idea of smart homes, like that are truly smart, that can nudge us towards better buying decisions and better behavior because they understand our biometrics if we allow them to. And
right.
privacy issues aside, and there's always a shadow to everything, right? But my feeling is that once the IoT economy really kicks off, the Internet of Things economy really mm-hmm. kicks off, and once AI gets sophisticated enough to analyze all that big data that's generated, including biometrics and quantify itself, we're going to get these very interesting computer-aided or AI-aided curated life experiences. And I think that the human condition could improve radically as a result of it.
Yeah.
So I'm hopeful about that. And I know there's a lot of smart people working hard to make that a reality. From a brand and marketing point of view, I think it's important for companies and our clients to be thinking about these new ecosystems, these new marketplaces, and how they should be activating at that level. So, you know, if your home is smart and it's reordering for itself, you know, all the traditional touch points
right.
are gone. And so, you know, what competencies do they need to start thinking about? What we like about it too is you can, as the consumer, you can set or calibrate your home AI to nudge you towards certain buying behaviors or decisions. So maybe you start buying a little bit less soda and you start buying a little bit more water.
Right.
You know, maybe you know where I'm going.
It sets the increment for you.
Exactly.
But, yeah.
And then on a purely government level or a social level, let's imagine you have whole neighborhoods that are smart and connected. They're providing data about behavior in each household. But on an aggregate level, it presents this incredible amount of insight about communities, about how they function, about, you know, what's working, what isn't working.
Who's using up all the water in LA?
Exactly.
Who took that long shower?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And, you know, again, there are massive privacy issues and freedom issues related
yes.
to it. You know, and we're dealing with that a lot.
Well,
right
it's all like, yeah. I feel like you kind of touched on this earlier, like
yeah.
the whole cyborg, you know, occurrence and
yeah.
the fact that we are opting in to a lot of things because we realize the convenience advantage, right?
Exactly.
Would you like your location data on? okay. You know, and you made the choice. And guess what? Waze will give you better directions now, like
yeah.
based on your driving style, not even just traffic, right? Like,
yeah.
oh, this guy always takes high streets.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
We'll give him that. But if I don't, you know, if I didn't opt into that, I don't get the experience, right? And
right.
it takes a couple of people to be, you know, sort of the testament to the possibility.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And I think they think it's a generational thing now, don't they? They think
right.
that younger people are much more open to, yeah, take it all. I don't care. I mean, it's going to make my life way easier.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, I mean, the older gen, I'm still a little bit wary.
Yeah, I'm almost like, let me read this part. There's like there's some statistic about the billions of hours worth of privacy policies that have not been read. People just go, they click the box, right? And nobody reads them.
I've never read them.
Exactly.
I've never read them.
And so there's like, I don't know what the number is, but it's pretty ridiculous.
Yeah.
You touched on something. So when you were talking about brands and like how they will play in that, because, you know, the marketing conversation I always look at as... marketing as utility, right? If you better service me as an individual and not just give me a cool commercial, right? Then I'm willing to be more loyal to that brand. And I think as we move into more of IoT and like it's really about this quantified self experience, then brands will be able to go like, okay, even if Snickers really satisfies and we know it's bad for it, but like they have an opportunity to like, if it's time for your treat, right? Like if you're on a diet and you're working, your connected home is working you towards that goals. Like, let Snickers be your reward. That's a great idea. Yeah. I'm writing this down. I'm Snickers, not even a client.
See, you're generating IP.
Show over. Last but not least, complete this phrase for me.
Okay.
Innovation to me is. And get a little closer to the mic. This is going to be good from the future. It's going to come from the future.
Innovation to me is science fiction.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. That sums it up. Any last words?
I mean,
we're not going to execute you.
I walked into a trap.
Trap door opens. Exactly. No future for you.
Yeah, no. I mean, it's just a real pleasure to be here. I know you've got well over 100 shows. I mean, esteemed company. It was a real pleasure to talk to you. I think, for your listeners, we live in amazing times. You know, what feels like science fiction to some extent really is science fact. And, if we have a positive, uplifting, inspirational narrative grounding in science and emerging technologies of today, we can create amazing things. So it's a pretty exciting time to be alive.
Well spoken. Well said.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you, everybody. This has been another installment of Innovation Crush, and we will talk to you next time.